Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's December 3rd, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal in New York City. We've got a great lineup tonight. We have James Ty, a Cicerone, who's running the beer program at Pinch in Yonkers, New York, the ultimate New York State, 100-tap beer program, which is pretty awesome. One of our favorite brewers in New York, Kelly Taylor from Kelso.
Howdy.
He's here. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing well. And I made it across town.
And you're going to pour us a beer on air, which always sounds and tastes
it's
good.
It's very exciting.
And there's an author. We met him this summer, Michael J. Malone. He's been hanging out at the Captain Lawrence Tasting Room up in Westchester. And he published a book of your notes from the Captain Lawrence Tasting Room.
That's right. Yep.
So there's a little bit of a Westchester vibe here. Westchester is that, if you don't know us, in New York, it's a little county just north of New York City with a lot of history. But, James, so you're in Yonkers. And there's a restaurant, Pinch, that's in Westchester. Kelly, you actually live in Westchester. That's the only connection.
Yep.
And Mamaroneck, right?
Mamaroneck.
Mamaroneck.
Thank you. Yeah. And, well, interestingly enough, Sonia even, she graduated high school in Yonkers in 1989. She went to...
Go Yonkers.
Yeah, man. She was, and she took off running.
And Michael, you used to live in the city, but you moved up to Westchester?
Yeah, I was in the East Village for about 12, 13 years, and... when my son was born, like a lot of people, we kind of ran out of room and moved up to Westchester.
All right. Let's start with James. James, we've known you. You're at Beer Acolyte on Twitter.
Yep.
We're at Beer _ Sessions.
Absolutely.
You keep popping up. Last time we talked, you were partners in a small brew pub in India.
Right.
And last spring, we were checking out some Hudson Valley breweries. You are a guide, and through you, we met guys from Rushing Duck and Broken Bow and Yonkers. Tell us about Pinch.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to. Pinch is it's pretty much an American steakhouse grill serving classics, anything from, I guess, Prime Rib for Two to a Monte Cristo. So, we kind of hark back to a little bit of the retro diner kind of scene, and you can see that in the decor of the restaurant itself. It's part of, again, part of the Empire City Casino. Ducasse Studios is involved in that as well. So it's a pretty strong team.
So it's like Alain Ducasse, the famous chef.
Yeah, that guy. He does good work.
What's Pinch?
So Pinch, and that's a good question, and we get that a lot.
Yeah,
Pinch really refers to, I guess it's a culinary unit of measurement. It's not a teaspoon of something. It's a pinch of something.
It's a pinch, like a dash.
Right.
Slightly less than a dash.
Exactly. And so that kind of connotes just the easiness and the laid-back nature of the establishment.
So you only serve very small pours? Is that
everything is
only
very,
for you, Jimmy.
Everything's very subtle.
I pour Jimmy a small one, and I give the rest to Kelly. So
there you go. That's what I'm talking about.
So what I'm most interested in, though, about this project is that, first of all, you're involved in selecting all the beers.
That's right.
Anyway, it's only New York State beers.
Yes, only New York State beers. And I think everybody that's involved, from senior management in the casino to Monsieur Ducasse himself, we feel really strongly about supporting local industry. And that's something that is kind of tasked with me. And I really kind of run with that. And it's really easy to do so because there are a lot of fantastic breweries in the state. Sitting next to a fellow that makes a few of them himself. So we do that, and we kind of promote everything that's local. And it makes a lot of sense environmentally, quality-wise.
How did you get on this path? I mean, you started working there. You're a beer expert, a Cicerone.
Yeah.
So who decided that it was going to be all New York State beers?
Well, it was decided. I'll just put it that way. And that because of that, it was easy to do so because there's so many great breweries again. I mean, I cannot underscore that. New York State, it can go toe-to-toe with a lot of different regions in the United States and ostensibly, you know, the world when it comes to great beers. So
right. We're going to be up there next Thursday.
Next Wednesday,
the 11th.
Exactly.
The 11th. I got the date right.
So, yeah, we have an event coming up next Wednesday. It is called the 2-Hour Tap Attack. We're featuring five different breweries, which are going to be situated in each of our five self-serve tables. So the concept is the brewer is going to come in, hang out at the table, and just kind of greet everybody that comes in and hang out and have beers, you know, nosh some over some finger foods and just talk good stuff.
You said self-serve tables. Is that the kind with the tap and the credit card and the?
It's got the tap, but we open it up.
You open it up.
Yeah, there's no credit card there, but it's kind of like a those gas station meters. So you have four. Table.
Because I've seen that in some other places where you go in and you sit at a tap and you just kind of go.
I kind of think that's where I'm going to put my mouth under the tap.
Yeah, well,
you keep it running.
Yeah,
you can't do that.
I think you would be out in very short order.
They would kick me out.
It'd be like you out.
Well, you got to buy the whole tap.
I'm doing a new thing in my place. I can't do this. But imagine you just reach across the bar and you pour your own beer from your customer side. You
know? Yeah, I've seen customers do that.
Not supposed to do.
Not supposed to do.
I don't think that's
not,
part of
it's frowned. It's frowned upon.
Well, I like this, but Westchester. So I mean. Tell us some of the breweries in Westchester that you've discovered, because some of them I'd never heard of until this year.
Yeah, some of the great ones that we've really been working with, Broken Bow out of Tuckahoe, they have just come on board like in the last few months. Michael Amoth does some great stuff up there. Rushing Duck, who was on last week,
Nikki Cavanaugh and her bow, yes.
Yeah, they make fantastic beer. The Beanhead Coffee Porter is one of my favorites, actually, so... props to them on that. Newbrick Brewing, Chris Basso, formerly of Brooklyn Brewery, and Paul out there, they do some fantastic stuff too. And one of my favorites, obviously, is Peekskill.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not necessarily Westchester, though. That's
not Westchester.
That's Westchester, but
it's Hudson Valley.
Captain Lawrence is kind of one of my thinking. It's Westchester.
So
it's pretty good.
Yeah, so this guy here, we got Michael J. Malone. So he's been haunting.
Is a segue.
Haunting the tasting room. So the big thing was, so Captain Lawrence used to be in Pleasantville.
Yep.
Where is it?
They're in Elmsford.
Elmsford. So that's another place in Westchester.
It's about maybe 3 miles away, closer to the city. They needed a big space to brew beer and a big space for people to sample beer. So found a good space. Kind of right off a main road, but a little bit off the beaten path, and lots of room for people to come.
Kelly, have you been to the tasting room there?
I have, yeah. And it's like right behind a budget rental truck place or something.
Do not park in the budget.
Yeah, no, it looks kind of, because you go up there and you follow your GPS and follow the directions that maybe Scott gave you, believe them or not. And then you get there, you're like, this is a budget rental truck place. Well, it's actually Captain Lawrence in disguise. They're in the back. They're trying to keep away people. They're just so popular.
Yeah, it's the speakeasy approach.
It's the speakeasy approach, Westchester version.
Well, I know. We know Scott's been on the show, and every year at Cooperstown, he usually goes up and he does a little pig roast on the back of his pickup truck.
Yep.
And I always ask him if he would do that at events, but does he do pig roast at the tasting
room? Oh, sure, absolutely, yeah. Now, their first year in the new space, which was last year, did not do it, but they did do it this year, and it was a good event. There was some cornhole and a lot of beer, and a couple pigs gave themselves to the cause.
So, like, what about the Westchester beer scene do you like? I mean, you obviously go. You've been in the tasting room every week for 2 years.
Yeah, I go every week
as you wrote this book.
It's work, I say to my wife, I gotta go to work. I gotta go sample some beer and talk to some people. But yeah, it's a really growing scene, and it seemed as though Captain Lawrence was kind of the only one in town for a while. But some good players, and more is always better. And it's always nice to see how the Captain Lawrence guys always were very supportive of some of the newcomers. And you think there's this rivalry or this competition, but it is this sense of, we are local craft beer guys and we got to stick together.
Well, and you're right too, though. It's, it is a growing scene. There's really only a couple breweries that are physically located in Westchester and a couple more that are up the valley. And you go to a lot of bars, and I know, having lived up there, I go into a lot of bars at this point, and a lot of them are still pouring you know, for lack of a better word, the mass market craft, you know, the Blue Moon and the Samuel Adams and the Shock Top. Well, the Shock Top.
A lot of Shock Top.
Yeah, you know, and then there's still a lot of overseas stuff, a lot of products from Europe, and I'm just amazed at how
I've never had Shock Top.
At how kind of just it's about 20 years behind in the beer scene.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, New York as a whole is a little bit behind from the West Coast where I'm from originally, but So the market is just growing, and it's virtually untapped at this point. And that's why we can all kind of afford to be more friendly with each other at this point, because it's not tooth and nail.
But there is a public will towards that, though. I mean, we're seeing that. Definitely.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. The market is definitely opening up.
It's really ramping up. Yeah.
Jimmy's out of beer.
Will you do your famous on-air beer pour?
Let's see if this works. This is the beauty of the can. Wow.
Oh, that's nice,
baby.
That is not a sound effect. That really happened.
Which one is this, Kelly? Yeah. This is the blue can.
There you go. This is the Pilsner. And I brought it because it's in a pretty blue can, which is really good to bring on the radio. Thank you. Nobody really gets that. But
thank you.
There we go. One more. So this was our first beer that we put into cans. First beer canned in Brooklyn since the days of Rheingold.
You're canning in the brewery.
Yep. Yeah, we have a mobile canning line that comes down. It's based out of Connecticut. This guy named Tyler has got a company called Ironheart Canning. And he puts a canning line on a truck. He warehouses my cans for me, loads up however many cans I need, and
you know what it sounds
brings
like?
Them down
it sounds
and
like
fills
a,
them up.
A Dr. Seuss kind of thing, where this guy comes into town.
Yeah, he's kind of very Dr. Seuss-esque. It's a cross between Dr. Seuss and Willy Wonka. You really ought to come over for canning day. It's mayhem.
I think we should. Yeah. I think that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we know all the startup breweries, you hear about them, they put, you know, what, 22 ounces, and they cap each one by hand.
Yeah.
I mean, you did some limited edition
bottles. Yeah, I brought one
bottles
here.
Over the
yeah,
years.
We'll talk about
and
that.
And what did you have? You had all your guys lined up, and everybody just had
we have a hand
cap them?
Yeah, this is we have the 750 milliliter bottles, because these wine bottle size are the only way to really make that cost effective, because we don't have a line necessarily. It's all hand bottled, hand corked, hand this, hand labeled. That's why this doesn't have a label on it. I ran out of energy. You get the beer, you get it in there, you get it in the bottle, and you get it out, and it becomes fairly expensive because there's a lot of labor involved, but that's why you can pull off these barrel aged things. But yeah, you line everybody up and you just schedule it for the day and fire off a bunch of beer. We have a lot of stuff aging in barrels and oak barrels and some high alcohol beers that are kind of laying down and conditioning in these bottles, and it's fun to kind of mess around with. But our bread and butter and the whole thing with Kelso is clean, simple, kind of elegant, and that's what we're going for in these cans. Is it's got a really nice clean label. It's easy to read. It's a nice accessible, drinkable beer, and it's
Kelly, just walk us through the canning. So it's a mobile canning unit, a Dr. Seuss thing. It shows up.
Yeah, yeah. He brings it down
it's
in
got
a big
furry animals.
Truck. He rolls it in and plugs it into our system, our power, our water, and everything, and gets
and
it
do
all
you have
set
the cans
up
already pre-made?
Yeah, the cans come in lots of 56,000.
And you buy those, or they bring? He already.
I buy the cans from the manufacturer and ship them to his warehouse, because that's one of the problems trying to package product, especially in a tight real estate market like New York City, is you don't have the space to hold the raw material and the unpackaged product, the empty cans. They come in a container of 56,000 cans, which is about 15 pallets, and I have nowhere to put those. So he came along, got them. Not only does he have the canning line, which I don't have room for, but he also has the space to hold the empty cans. So when I say, okay, come down, let's do 50 barrels of cans, so bring down 1,000 cases worth, and he'll bring them down, put them on his truck, unload everything into my loading dock. I clear my loading dock out for the day and don't schedule any incoming or outgoing deliveries. We're now canning for the day. The loading dock's buckled down. And
he just sits on the sidewalk.
He's inside. He's inside, which was good because it was raining the other day when he was down there. But, yeah, he's inside, and he brings the empty cans in as we need them. And then the cans go into our cold room. At the end of the day, he cleans up his system and rolls it back outside and puts it on his truck and leaves, and we have a cooler full of full cans that the distributor theoretically picks up like clockwork the next day if everything goes correctly.
One thing, like, so when we're talking about doing your own bottling line, everyone's capping the the bottles as they make them or whatever. How does the cans work? Like, is the can, like, is the top open and then they put the top on? How does a canning machine work?
Yeah, the canning machine's really pretty simple. It's kind of fun to watch, and I'm very, very thankful that I don't have to maintain it because there's a lot of moving parts. But basically what happens is you get these empty cans without a lid on them so that the whole top is open. And the cans come down, get rinsed, flipped upside down so that the rinse water drains out, flip right side up, get purged with CO2, go to another station, tube drops down inside the cans. We do four at a time. Tubes drop down, fill up with beer. You get a little foam on the top. It goes to the next station. A lid slides down from a like a little slide. Basically, it looks like a kid's slide. This lid goes on there, kicks it over into a little machine that seams it, and it twists the can and pinches the corners of the lid and the can itself. And it just kind of pinches it and spins it and seams it up and sends it off to the six-packer where you just put the six-pack rings on and then it comes shooting out the other side in six-packs. And it's, assuming everything works properly, it's great. Every once in a while you get the can doesn't line up correctly with the lid and then you get this kind of half-can thing and it stops and the whole machine kind of comes to a grinding halt. But then you just take out the crinkled can. This is kind of one of the beauties of it, is even when you're bottling...
And then you drink it?
You have... Yeah, you take it out, you drink it. But when you're bottling, you have a lot of broken glass. Things break during the bottling runs. And then you got to stop the whole thing, clean off the conveyor, because broken glass will continue to shred the conveyor. So you have a significant amount of downtime that you have to... Or you have an amount of downtime that you have to allocate for the cost of the whole thing. With the cans, you get a can that gets crushed, you just kind of pull it off the line and continue to go, because it just doesn't gum up the system. So at the end of the day, you have this kind of big pile of aluminum that is very highly recyclable. It's a very easily recycled and very efficient process, so you don't have a lot of excess waste in the whole thing. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
Kelly, do you have t-shirts?
I do, not with me.
I'll tell you, I'm going to do a fun thing. Maggie's on Twitter right now, at @beer_sessions. If you know the Dr. Seuss story where they have this traveling machine that they put the stars on the bellies and took the stars off the other bellies,
yeah.
If you know what I'm talking about, you're going to win a free Kelso t-shirt.
So, yeah, that's a good idea.
So check that out. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're talking about Dr. Seuss canning systems and Kelly from Kelso, James Ty from Pinch, and our new buddy Michael Malone, who wrote notes from the Captain Lawrence Tasting Room. So there's a Twitter question out there. If you know, there's a Dr. Seuss story. I'm alluding to it. It's kind of like a canning assembly line, but they put this way. You put stars on the bellies and they take it. Maggie's doing the Twitter right now. Go to @beer_sessions. You can win a Kelso t-shirt. That's all I'm going to say about it for now. So, guys, welcome back. We just drank the Kelso Pilsner. What's the next beer, Kelly? It sounds like a Kelso.
If you don't mind, we'll just finish this tasting off. But this is a quad bock that I did. It's actually not entirely a Kelso quad buck. I did this for my anniversary of brewing for Heartland Brewery in the city.
Thank you.
So
it's really, but I'll bring that up. I mean, you really are one of the more accomplished brewers in the city because you're running a full production brewery.
Full production brewery. Yeah, we're doing 18,000 barrels worth of production. About 4,000 barrels of that is Kelso right now, and then 5,000 barrels is or 7,000 barrels is Heartland Brewery, and then we're doing some other breweries as well to top off our.
Yeah,
our
but you did
production.
For a while. You did Six Point. You did Great South Bay.
We've brewed for Six Point and Great South Bay. We did Southampton for a while. We helped Jeremy start the Coney Island line originally. Right now we're helping other half brewing company get rolling.
Oh, it's your buddy Sam Richardson.
Yeah, he was my former head brewer. Yeah, but he's having a little issue with the city trying to get his equipment turned on. So
that's weird.
Yeah, unbelievable. The city is not jumping all over themselves to get new manufacturing up and running in the city. I don't understand it, but anyway, so we're helping him get some product into the field, and so we've brewed a lot of beer for a lot of people. And it's been very a very interesting ride. This beer is a beer, as I said, I did for Heartland Brewery. It's 10% alcohol, double bock, basically.
It's
just nice big malty.
One of my favorite styles of beer for this time of year. And if you're thinking about holiday beers, I mean, I'm not against special Christmas ales, but I think there's so many really great styles like Doppelbocks and porters and Belgian quads that to me I only drink from now to Christmas or. But I don't necessarily need – I mean, how do you guys feel about specifically Christmas beers? I mean, to me, this is a Christmas beer.
Yeah. I mean, this to me is more of a mid-afternoon kind of beer. It doesn't really matter what time of year it is. I mean, I spice beers – I'm assuming Christmas beers meaning spiced beers, right?
That's what I don't know. I feel like that what's going on, there's enough winter, style beers that I want to drink this time of year that I don't – necessarily
yeah, I mean,
need to have a Christmas spice beer,
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they're good. Sometimes, it really is a matter of what you're in the mood for. I mean, I do plenty of spiced beers. I get a little tired of spiced beers after the pumpkin onslaught. The pumpkin beers start coming out in August now, which is a little much. But, sometimes it's nice to have a little bit of spice to it. As you could tell from this quad bock just by tasting it, it's got that higher alcohol, the caramelization.
It's quad buck.
Almost kind of a plummy, pruny, rum raisiny kind of thing going on to it. So it's kind of got all of its own things going on anyway. You wouldn't want to put any spices in there at all. But at the same token, we're doing for Heartland, we're doing the Old Red Nose, which is a 5.5% alcohol, orange and cinnamon. It's really nice, and I'll drink that just straight up, or maybe I'll put it in a big pot and simmer it with some cloves and a little bit of rum. Kind of give yourself a little bit of flexibility to do whatever you want to do and just have fun with it. Enjoy. That's kind of the theme of the holidays, right? It's just really enjoy yourself and enjoy the flavors and how everything kind of bounces off each other. And it's great.
No, I love it. And yeah. James, at Pinch, I mean, you've got 100 lines of New York State beer.
Right.
Do you bring in seasonal beers? Are there any New York State holiday beers, winter beers that you really like?
I like a lot of them, but I mean, back to your point, I agree. I think sometimes when you get a little bit too, if you beat someone over the head a little bit too much with the seasonality of it, that can get a little bit too much. And so I appreciate the fact that, especially drinking this quad bock right here, I mean, it has a lot of qualities that make sense, in this kind of colder winter months and stuff. I definitely get a lot of rum raisin coming off of that. And for me, that's a really nice.
There's a great German beer. I just we're at Roberta's in Bushwick in Brooklyn, and they change their draft lines. And tonight I came in, and there's the Kulmbacher Eisbock, which is another great kind of winter style, right?
Yeah. Right.
But I think that definitely inherently in these traditions of Belgium and Germany and England in particular, there are beers that are for cold weather, barley wines and Doppelbocks and. If anything, I want to drink more of them. That's the whole global warming thing. Is that I don't want an eternal spring. I want cold weather. I want to drink my dark beers. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a funny thing. Coming from the Pacific Northwest, where it's kind of cold all the time anyway. it's really interesting because you're here in the Northeast. The seasons are so distinct. And you get these frigid cold winters, and you get these summers that are just baking. You don't want to have that Doppelbock or spiced beer when it's 100 degrees outside. In fact, we were talking about pumpkins coming out early. We got to start brewing pumpkin in July, and it's about 100 degrees inside the brewery. And the last thing you want to smell is cinnamon and cloves. You know, people say, well, I don't know, you have cinnamon all the time. No. You know, cinnamon is a warming herb or a warming spice, excuse me, and it just smelling it makes you a little bit warmer. And I can tell you that when it's 100 degrees and you smell cinnamon, you feel like you're going to explode. It's not a good way.
And what about up at Captain Lawrence? Like, you've been hanging out in the taste. Tell us about some of the experiences you've had spending many weekends in the tasting room at Captain Lawrence, and that led you to write the book.
Yeah, typically I'll go for maybe just an hour, a little bit more than an hour or so, and sometimes I'll bring my kids. And when I bring my kids, they will pick out the people that I should approach
Good
and
one,
speak
Kelly.
With.
Kelly's pour always sounds true.
On the it does.
It is true.
So the good thing, you know, I'm a journalist, so I'm accustomed to resistant sources, and the Captain Lawrence experience has been diametrically different in that people have had a few drinks, they're in a good mood, they're happy to be there, they're very approachable. I mentioned this in the preface of the book. I've probably interviewed about 1,000 people there, and only one was ever kind of standoffish, and he did come up after 5 minutes later and said, hey, you know, I'm sorry, I'm just a cranky person by nature. So it's been fun meeting a lot of people and kind of catching them in a good mood. Sort of the opposite of being a doctor or a dentist, where you catch people where they just don't want to be there.
Cheers.
All right, cheers. Yeah.
So this is a winter ale with spices.
From Captain Lawrence.
Yeah.
And what are some of the beers that you really enjoyed the most from Captain Lawrence over the years? You try like everything. So what do they do? At the tasting room, they put everything up, don't they?
Pretty much. I mean, at any given time, there are 3 or 4 pilot system small batch beers. And then there's the regular lineup of 7 or 8. So when I came in almost two years ago, I loved the fresh Chester Pale Ale, but my palate has gotten a little more hops hungry. So I like the India Pale Ale now.
I would think that of the breweries that you know in particular, James, I mean, you really have met so many great new breweries in New York State. Mm. I mean, this idea of like what Captain Lawrence is, it's like kind of an industrial space, you know, old warehouse that's now a brewery with a tasting room. I was down in Cape May, New Jersey. You know, there's Cape May Brewing. It's the same kind of thing. It's in like that strip with like the budget rented car and, you know, the airport next door. And they have a really great – it's a draw. I mean, don't you want to – I mean, that's what I want to do on the weekends. I mean, I want to go to – if I wasn't living in the city, I would go to breweries on the weekends.
Yeah.
Are there any other breweries up in the Hudson Valley and West Shore that have the same kind of feel with this like kind of great tasting room vibe? I know Peekskill is a great place to go.
Yeah.
Peekskill's great. I know Yonkers, they're about to open up their tasting room pretty soon, too. That's going to be really fantastic. You know, I can't wait to go there. And I think Broken Bow has like a nice feel to it, too. It's right behind, if I'm not mistaken, it's like a self-storage facility. I know it's right across from like, you know, a car upholstery service, so it's got that same industrial vibe.
There's a new one opening in the Bronx, too. I mean, obviously Bronx breweries. Brewing operations almost completed.
Yeah.
And Gun Hill Brewing Company, former brewmaster of Chelsea Brewing Company.
Which one?
Chris Sheehan. Gun Hill Brewing Company. Chris Sheehan.
And where's that going to be?
That's on Gun Hill Road in the Bronx.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's almost operational at this point. So this is a tasty winter ale from Captain Lawrence. Ale made with spices, but the spices are, I like it because the spices are more subtle. You know, they're not. It's not.
Yeah.
If you get those really heavy-handed cinnamon gingery things, it's too much. This is just, you know, it's spiced, but it tastes like a nice beer, and it's really easy to drink. And that's what I'm looking for in a holiday beer.
You can definitely taste through and taste the beer on that.
So yeah, it's supposed to taste like a beer. It's not supposed to taste like punch.
Yeah, the pumpkin,
right.
Pumpkin ale is similar, where you get a nice pumpkin flavor, but you're not bonked over the head with pumpkin.
Yeah.
I like some of the other winter styles. I like you know, Sam Smith, the Winter Warmer. Was it Winter Warmer or Winter Welcome? I can't remember. But you know, when I first started drinking beer, that was one of my favorites. And this is like kind of Winter Warmer style of beer. It's kind of like this, a winter ale, you know.
Yeah. Well, but Jimmy, you got to remember, you shouldn't drink so many European beers. You drink a lot of European beers. You notice that?
I used to. It informed my palate.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That was your awakening.
I'm mostly, but that's why James is on. I'm mostly drinking New York State beers these days.
Right, that's right. True. Yeah.
You know, and I want to just.
Jersey, local,
I wanna
local
kick,
beers.
We did our annual Battle of Belgians a few weeks ago at James number 43. And of the American beers, your Kelso Fuku really placed high. It was one of the top scoring beers.
Thank you. That's a fun one. People don't really understand what's going on in that beer.
Yeah, because you're making so many great. Like, what is Kelso Fuku?
Well, that was a beer we designed with the Mama Fuku Group, which has a, you know, if you're not familiar with that, they have a pretty high end American Asian fusion kind of thing going on, and they're very, very particular about their flavors. The characteristic flavor of their restaurants and what we were looking for in this beer is lightly smoky, lightly salty, a little bit of fruitiness to it. So what we did was basically a wit beer. It's a wheat beer with wit beer yeast, so it's got that natural fruitiness to it. And then we added smoked malt, a little bit of sour malt, give it some extra acidity, a little bit of smokiness, and then table salt at the end to give it that.
Yeah,
that
the salt
little salty.
So it's a fruity, sour malt.
Yeah, there's a sour malt. They usually use the sour malt in wit beers anyway to give it a little bit more brightness, a little bit more acidity. we used a higher percentage of the sour malt to give it a little bit more of a tang to help offset the smokiness, and then we threw the table salt in there just to give it that really interesting, for lack of a better term, salty finish. It was a really interesting beer. It's 4.5% alcohol. It goes really well with ramen, incidentally, for whatever reason.
Yeah, like a shio ramen or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, it's delightful.
I'm starving.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about malts and local grains that Kelly and I are working on a special project. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars on Heritage Radio Network.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today. Nothing I was hoping for, but
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Looking forward to a nice meal afterwards because we always have food and beer together. Mm. You like that? We're talking about New York State beers. We got James Ty from Pinch, Kelly Taylor from Kelso, and I got to read this. Michael J. Malone, who wrote Notes from the Captain Lawrence Tasting Room. So I just want to say that, you know, we're goofing around a little bit about Dr. Seuss, but Kelly, you got to spill the beans. We put it out on Twitter. We were talking about the mobile canning line, and somehow made me think about this Dr. Seuss image. What's the story that we're talking about?
Well, we're
Kelly's the only one that knew. He gets the unless somebody does it on Twitter right now. Kelly wins a free Kelso T-shirt.
I'm the only one that knew. Well, it happens to be one of the favorite stories of my my son. My son's almost 4 years old, Cameron, and he loves the story of the pot-bellied Sneetches. The star-bellied Sneetches, I'm sorry. So they're, you know, kind of little yellow creatures that have stars on their bellies. Some of them do, some of them don't. The ones with the stars on their bellies say that they're better than the ones that don't have stars. So then the ones that don't have stars hire this guy that comes in with this little mobile starring machine and stars their bellies up, and then everybody's got stars. So then the ones that had stars want to have the stars removed. So luckily this guy has another machine that will remove the stars, and then there's this big conveyor line, and he's just making a killing, and that kind of reminded us of my mobile cannon guy.
And that's what you told me about the mobile cannon guy. That's all I could think of.
Yeah.
It's someone from Dr. Seuss. So.
Yeah.
And James, I know you have some children.
No, yeah, I was going to say, and then all the Sneetches went out for some pints of oatmeal stout afterwards, right?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
That's how they turned into potbellies.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
That's true. But, you know, we did want to clue, and there was a real reference to this Dr. Seuss thing. But, I mean, that's what I think of. You know, you guys are brewing, and so many of the breweries start up just making kegs, and, you know, starting up a canning line, it's like this huge, crazy process. But that's all I pictured was this Dr. Seuss kind of machine coming in.
Well, it's not unlike that in the sense that there's a need in the market, and somebody recognized that need. Now, in this case, there's a lot of mobile canning lines and mobile bottling lines on the West Coast. Originally started off for the wineries in Sonoma, but they started branching out and doing more microbreweries and up and down the West Coast. And so it's a known entity, it's a known engineering, it's a known business model that really makes a lot more sense out here where real estate is more expensive, people just aren't packaging in the way that they are out on the West Coast. I mean, you know, commercial real estate on the West Coast is like $2 per square foot per year for a commercial space, whereas out here it's 20. You know, so you just don't put a lot of manufacturing equipment if you don't need it, and if you can sell the draft, you know, it's a little bit kind of a boring story, but anyway, so it's prohibitive to put in a lot of machinery here, so it makes sense to have it mobile. And when you go up and have a little warehouse up in Connecticut and then feed anywhere between Boston and Philadelphia and out into Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania, you can hit a lot of different small breweries that didn't have the opportunity to put their beer into package like this. So consequently, you're going to be seeing a lot more cans coming up, which is good and bad for me. You know, I'm utilizing the mobile canning, but there's going to be a lot more beer in cans that you wouldn't have seen before because people didn't have the resources to either buy the cans, which I mentioned, 56,000, you have to buy half truckload up front, or to buy the machine, or both. Regardless, anyway, so that's kind of like the star-bellied Sneetch.
James, would you serve craft beer cans at Pinch?
I would absolutely serve craft beer in cans. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and it's arguably, you know, maybe the best portable form that's out there.
Yeah, one of the things I was talking to my head brewer, Peter, about this the other day with the cans is, it's interesting. I've had my beer on draft in a variety of different restaurants, and of course you think draft is better, but if you think about what the beer is touched by the time it comes into a pint glass and the pint glass itself, there's a lot more points of contact that are outside the brewery's control when the beer is coming out on a draft system. You have the keg couplers and the draft system and the glycol cooling and the CO2 dispense and the gas blend at the restaurants and all that stuff. Whereas with the can, it's done all in your brewery. Then you got to worry about how the temperature and how it's held, because people have a tendency to hold cans and cases of beer out at room temperature until they're ready to drink them, which you shouldn't do with craft product. Right. Craft product should always be held refrigerated. But at the same token, this once it's opened, it's consumed. You don't have to worry about the draft system and the beverage lines whole thing. So it's kind of an interesting...
You know, Oscar Blues, the Dale's Pale Ale, I mean, that's something that I drink a lot. I can buy it at the supermarket. And I always pour it into a glass. You know,
yeah, well, you should.
If I'm buying a craft beer, I pour it in the glass.
Yeah, you should. Any beer, you should pour into a glass, except for maybe a Corona. That should be drunk out of a bottle.
We don't know about those kind of beers.
It was 100 degrees outside. It tastes pretty dang good.
Well, I think we got a question. We got a question from one of our listeners. That's going to come up in a second. But let's go back to your book, because, I mean, guys, we're all in the same. Let's toast. These are all kind of the brains of the business here.
I just drained that
one. Brewer, and he's part of the New York City Beer Week, the New York City Brewers Guild. A lot of cool things coming up. James Ty.
Cheers.
Cicerone. James, learning to be a beer guy.
Yeah.
So you took the Cicerone program.
That I did.
And what level are you at now?
I'm currently a certified Cicerone. So that's a level 2 out of 3. You know.
And you also took the Micromatic course, right?
I also took Micromatic. So to Kelly's point, it's essential to make sure that the draft system is in tip-top shape, because we want to maintain the intent of the brewer, and that, I think that's something that we do. Absolutely.
And do you think that like, I know some of the places like Torst and Greenpoint, they have like different, you know, regulators. Do you think that every draft line needs to have its own unique composition of gas and temperature, or do you think that most?
I mean, in an ideal world,
fit in,
yeah. I mean, they fit the way that most of us work with it. It's, you have volume carbonation, which is kind of the unit that you're looking at for pressure. So I think most of them fit within three or four different categories. I mean, Taurus is really great because they have such a flexible system, and more power to them in that regard. But I think for the most part, you're talking about, you know, your regularly carbonated beers, some of the more highly carbonated ones, such as your German wheats. And then you have also the nitro dispense lines. And then you might want maybe something that's a little bit in between the highly carbonated and the regularly carbonated beers.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, it's kind of hard because you can't just you have to have some restriction on the lines.
Absolutely.
And the restriction, if you're going to, in an ideal world, you're going to change the restriction on the end of the line as the beer's, where the beer is coming out. So you could put a restriction faucet on there, which is $100 versus $20.
Right.
You know, I don't think anybody's really, very few places are going to do that.
Probably not.
So I mean, in an ideal world, every faucet will be a restrictor faucet, and every line will have its own gas mix on it. But that's just not, you know, kind of the reality of the situation.
And in an ideal world, all the brewers will let us know what the volume carbonation is on every single product.
Ah, yeah. That's a good point.
So,
in an ideal world, we'd make a killing instead of doing this
on
for
another,
love.
So that's probably why the American craft beer is doing so well, is that a lot of American craft brewers are making their draft beer for like the American craft beer systems, right? I mean,
I don't think I understand.
I'm going too deep. Okay.
Yeah.
It's way too deep.
No.
Let's just toast this.
No, I think it's because it's delicious.
It's delicious. No, but I mean, like, I'll give you an example. In Germany, there's Schneider, one of our favorite breweries out of southern Germany. And they require specific, like, you know, special tubings. And they're a little, they need special, you know, systems to come on draft properly.
Right.
You know, and I do feel like that more of the American craft beers kind of are made the same way, then they can go through the crap. I don't know what I'm talking about, but you guys are supposed to back me up.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, here's the thing. There should be a standard for dispense of beer, and you should I had somebody, one of the sales reps for a distributor, call the other day and say, hey, somebody's pushing your Pilsner on a Guinness gas system, which is 75% nitrogen, 75% nitrogen, 25% CO2. So what's the gas pressure you recommend on that? And I said, I don't recommend that mix of gas at all for a Pilsner. That's just not – that's a mix of gas for a beer that's flat and you want to keep it flat. For a Pilsner that's carbonated and you want to keep it carbonated, or Hefeweizen or any Captain Lawrence IPA, these beers are carbonated. You can't push them with nitrogen unless you're doing a keg a day. And the gas mix doesn't matter. You know, if you're sitting on a keg for 2 or 3 days, you can't push it with that kind of pressure or with that kind of gas mix. You just can't. But people, the other side of the coin, people want to do the best they can, but they don't want to put in a mixer box, because a gas blender box costs $800 or $1,000 to put in. And then you've got to have two different sets of gases. You have to have a CO2 and a nitrogen, and then that box blends them
together. That's where I'm going. So, like, with James, like your micromatic training and Cicerone training, these are the kind of things that you guys have to talk about, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you can't serve something that's not really where the brewer really wants that to be. You know, the brewer has a certain level of intention that he or she has, you know, in putting out a product, and you want to, as the curator of a beer program, you know, you really want to express that to its fullest, and you want to, like, maintain a certain sense of integrity when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think most places, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think most places, depending on your run and what kind of top pressure you're going to need, there's a certain amount of pressure you need to get the beer out of the keg, period, to the bar. You need to have a certain pressure, and then whatever that pressure is will determine what your gas mix is. But as a general rule, you should have about 60 or 70% CO2. And then the remainder is a nitrogen gas. And that will do well for most of the beers on this table and most of the craft beers in the market. It'll keep their gas about where you want them to be within reason. Right. And you can adjust the pressures on the kegs up and down. So you can have little banks of pressure. Maybe these four beers are at 25 PSI and these four beers are at 30 PSI, but you have the same gas mix. And that should be fine, really. You don't need to every single one be that specific, because most by the time you pour it into a pint glass, it's going to be kind of irrelevant anyway, you know, because it's going to be how clean is the glass and how fast is it coming out and which bartender is pouring, because some bartenders pour better than others. You know, it's just kind of a it's going to have to let it go at some point and not worry about it and enjoy the beverage, for goodness sakes.
All right.
Right.
We geeked out as far as I could, but I'm glad you guys talked about it. No, you guys
know,
in this room.
You know better to ask me questions like that.
It's
I start talking. Jimmy starts glazing over. He's like, oh, God. You know, I got a question somebody else is asking.
You're beer professionals. Come on. Here's a Twitter question from @BossyBeerGirl. I love that. @BossyBeerGirl. It's to Mike, because he just wrote this great book, Notes from the Captain Lawrence Tasting Room, Mike Malone. To Mike, why did you pick Captain Lawrence for your piece?
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's a great question. When I moved out of the city up to Westchester, they were the local. Can I keep this?
Yeah, keep Bossy Beer Girl.
The first ever question I've gotten on a radio show.
it's the internet. Don't get too carried away.
So when we moved up to Westchester, I think for a lot of people it was a bit of a shock. It was very quiet and just not a lot going on. And I just thought Captain Lawrence's original space in Pleasantville was the greatest place in the world. And I loved bringing my son and filling up my growler and talking with the guys and trying some samples. And when they moved into the bigger space, it was still really close to my home. And I just thought I have to somehow take the things that I can do well and throw them toward Captain Lawrence and see if they will let me kind of marry my abilities with their considerably greater abilities.
So all that time you were writing about notes from the Captain Lawrence tasting room, did you get free beer?
Well, part of my remuneration package, a substantial part, is beer. So I do get a certain allotment of beer every month, which certainly comes in handy
high
this
five.
Time of year.
That and mean, now let's
that
get
means
back
yes.
to
yes.
We didn't get to talk about the local grain project as much, but we will. We'll be back in January with Kelly. Kelly, we have a great event every year called New York City Brewers Choice, which is part of the New York City Beer Week.
Right.
And this year with Kelly and Grow NYC and Green Markets, all the brewers are going to be making at least a small batch with some New York State malt. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. Well, New York State's local grains, not all of them from New York State, but. But a substantial portion of the grains will be coming from New York State, and the breweries will be all. Is it all New York State breweries that are coming to
I
this
think
event?
It's pretty much predominantly New York State breweries. We may have a few guests from out of state.
Pretty much predominantly.
That'll be February 26th, and it's NYCBrewersChoice.com. But you guys also, as a New York City brewer, you guys are the New York City Brewers Guild.
Right.
This will be your second year running New York City Beer Week.
Right.
What's coming up on Thursday?
So Thursday we have a fundraiser for the Brewers Guild. It's at the information's on our website, nycbrewersguild.com. And the fundraiser is at the Brooklyn Brewery. All 14 New York City licensed beer producers and operators will be there bringing some special beers. We're bringing a Cabernet barrel-aged Imperial IPA. Heartland's bringing holiday-spiced ale in bottles, which would be very exciting. And there's going to be about 35 different beers there. And that's a fundraiser for the Brewers Guild for administrative costs to promote Beer Week, which is the idea for Beer Week is to drive business to the retailers during an off time of year, promote craft beers in a time of year that
we know it, man, and we're looking forward to
it. Just keep up the love, man. Keep the beers going. Cheers.
All right. And James, you got a special event next week at Pinch if anyone wants to go up to Yonkers.
Yep. So next Wednesday there's a 2-hour tap attack. Five brewmasters, five different breweries. Everybody's going to be serving at their respective self-serve tap table. Mr. Kelly Taylor will be there.
Is this like a throwdown? We're going to be doing throwdown?
We'll find out.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a throwdown.
I'll let you know at 8:15.
Can I put my mouth under the self-service tap?
Yeah, you come up there. Yeah. It's fine. I'd pay to see that, actually.
Yes. Then you don't have to wash your glasses.
No, that's right. Yeah. No glasses necessary.
All right.
Just get a straw.
You guys, this has been a fun, and we had to try a couple great beers tonight.
Fantastic.
James, you brought a California beer we didn't get to try. Which one was that?
So it's a Hangar 24
It's the Hammerhead from the Barrel Roll series. It's a barley wine that's aged in rye and bourbon.
Wait, why didn't we try that one?
Because there were so many great beers.
Because I
here.
Kept talking. God.
I think we're gonna pop it now, and we're going to hang out at Roberta's. Kelly, you brought the Pilsner, and then you brought a special, what, a quad bock?
There was the quad bock. There's a, yeah, I brought the Heartland quad bock. This is on tap right now at Heartland's, and you can also buy it in the bottle at the Houston Hall restaurant. Nice. So they have these bottles for sale for like $18.
All right.
Which is really, they price these things at a ridiculously low level. I don't know, $18 for a 10% alcohol quad bock.
Shut up.
You know, it's like, come on.
I know you're doing great things with Kelso and Heartland, and I'm due for another visit because I love coming to your brewery. But you don't have a tasting room, do you?
No. Well, for you, yeah. For you, we do, yeah.
Heartland,
but it's easy. We don't need glasses for you. Just right up to the tank.
All right. And Micah, you got your book.
Yep.
You brought us the Liquid Gold from Captain Lawrence, which is, actually, I think that's a really great beer, and I'm glad you brought it. I haven't had it in a couple of years. I also am a big fan of the Captain Lawrence, the Imperial IPA,
yeah,
which is one of their first bottled items.
Yeah,
which,
I noticed they have it at the bar here.
Yeah, that's a great one, too.
It's been
a great show. We talked a little about Westchester. We talked about, you know, local beers and the New York City Beer Week fundraiser coming up this week. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And check out the Good Beer Seal. If you want to learn more about places to drink good beer in New York City, go to goodbeerseal.com. There's over 40 bars that promote and support good craft beer. Thanks to James, Kelly, and Mike for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Seiden, and Justin Kennedy, and engineer Joe Galarraga and Evan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right. All right. Cheers. Thanks,
Jimmy. Salute.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.